started to go into sleep mode, and I had to be like, no, 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 no.
Oh, no.
Wake up, laptop. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, all the way on the opposite side of, like, I don't know, the city that we're in. It's not even the opposite. You're like a few miles south of me.
Yeah.
It's Max. How you doing, Max?
Doing pretty good. You know, not sleeping a ton because I got a dog and we're trying to crate train her. So I've been doing a lot of sleeping on the floor so she doesn't get lonely.
Yes, congratulations on the new exciting addition to your family.
Thanks, man.
She seems very sweet, even if she does, you know, bark a lot and do other gross things.
I was going to say, I hope you're ready to edit out some barking sounds. We've talked about this, but if there's like a dog within a 200-foot radius of my house... My hearing now, like I've been to a lot of shows in my life, but my hearing at this point sounds like those vines where the volume is cranked up to like 300% and everything sounds like clipped and blown out.
Yeah.
Like if she sees a dog, it's just like. So.
God, that just made me miss going to shows badly. I want to go to a show so bad. There's a YouTube channel called Hate56.
Yep.
Yeah. He just like puts out almost daily, puts out really impressive edited videos of punk and hardcore shows. I've been kind of sustained off of that. I deeply miss like being in a mosh pit with people. Anyway, sorry to get sad on you. Yeah. Sorry about your ears, man.
I'm sorry that your ears are getting better. So.
I don't know. I've heard that you can't really gain hearing loss, or like I've heard that you can't necessarily get your hearing back after losing it from, you know, exposure to loud ass music and that goddamned rock and roll. But, you know, it is what it is. That's why we're podcasters now, is to kind of save the, you know, the remaining hearing that we have with the gentle, dulcet tones of two white men huddled around microphones.
You just got to like make sure to level the music all right in the beginning and we'll be fine.
Yeah, not too loud now. Hush, 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 hush. Well, we haven't gathered here on this Zoom call to talk about ear damage. We've come here to talk about life damage. That's right. This is a podcast about death and an awkward segue. And you've prepared something for us to discuss today. What you got for us?
Well, first off, I'm going to refer to death as just life damage from here on out. So that was very good.
There's got to be a band out there called Life Damage by now.
I'm just going to, this is warranting.
Are you doing a quick Google?
Quick Google. You know, not really. It doesn't really look like there's a band named Life Damage. So.
Well, once again, the Pre-Dead Boys are giving you free band name ideas. Okay.
So you know how sometimes you have an idea and you're like, oh, this is a good idea. And then you take the first step and you immediately find out that it's a terrible idea.
Yeah. That sounds like my life up to this point.
So that's what happened with our topic today while I was working on it. Because today we're going to be talking about the idea of a necropolis.
Oh.
So before we really get into the nitty gritty, let's crack into the topic. And then I'm going to have you reveal why this was a just fucking terrible idea for us to do.
Way to sell it.
It's for a very silly reason, but still.
Okay.
So first up, let's do the pre-Dead Boys crack into the topic moment, brought to you today for me by Clear American Seltzer Waters.
Oh, new brand.
Mint mojito flavor.
Wow. Is that good?
It's Walmart brand.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
And I got Polar Lemon.
Yeah, hell yeah. Perfect. Yeah, I had to go get stuff for the dog and groceries. And since I'm trying not to do too many places at once, I went to Walmart. And they were pretty low on seltzer, but they had this. And it was either like Mint Mojito or Moscow Mule. And I went with the Mint Mojito flavor. So.
And those are non-alcoholic?
Yeah, no, it says so right on the can. It says non-alcoholic.
I like how you showed me like I was your teacher and you had to prove it.
But it's good. It's like a nice cucumber mint. It's pretty good.
Nice.
So, to demonstrate why choosing this topic was a very dumb idea on my part, and to kind of explain why I've been talking so weird in the lead up to this, I'm going to have you read the first 7 words of the Encyclopedia Britannica entry for Necropolis.
You have fucked me. That's what you've done. I'm looking at this right now and I'm set to fail. Necropolis, plural. Necropolises, necropoles, necropoleis, or necropoli.
Yeah, I'm going to be real. I thought about turning back after I read that. Like, I sat down to start work on this, and I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm going to say necropolises.
That's not allowed on here. That's not. Oh, wait, no. Necropolises. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you can say that. That's legal.
But, like, I sat down and I was like, I titled the episode, like, Necropolis Notes, and then had to, like, figure out, I was like, what's the plural? Like, And I just couldn't figure it out and just started referring to it as Cities of the Dead in my own head.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Cities of the Dead. That's a little more to the point.
Yeah. So I guess we can start to overcome our fear of irregular plural nouns at this point. You remember how bad mausoleums was as well?
That was a little bit of a... I had some marble mouth there, for sure.
Mausolea, I think, is the preferred.
That was the pretty plural option. Mausolea. I like that one.
So I did find some stuff on necropolises. That's pretty cool, and that's what we'll talk about today. But, Dorian, first off, what is a necropolis?
Well, I'm going to tell you. Let me tell you.
Right.
A necropolis is a large, designed cemetery with elaborate tomb monuments. The name stems from the ancient Greek necropolis, literally meaning city of the dead. The term usually implies a separate burial site at a distance from a city, as opposed to tombs within cities, which were common in various places and periods of history.
So you remember when we talked about rural cemeteries in our early quarantine episode?
Rural cemeteries, yeah.
Pastoral.
For sure.
Back when we thought the quarantine would only last like a month. Or halcyon Whoops. Days. So, necropolises are kind of like old-timey rural cemeteries, but like very old-timey rural cemeteries. They were outside of town. They were usually pretty monument-based, without just rows of headstones. You know, they usually had a lot of stuff going on. We've actually talked about a few before on this podcast, namely the Giza Pyramid Complex with the Great Pyramids and the Sphinx, and the complex housing the Terracotta Army. It was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
A thing I didn't really realize was that the Sphinx is like very close to, like, right next to the pyramids.
Directly next to it? Really?
Yeah.
I always thought that was just a corny thing that they did, like, you know, visit Egypt sort of tourist shit. But they're actually that close in proximity to each other.
Yep.
Okay.
I love the movie Team America. I think it's very funny. And there's a bit where they're going through, like, it opens up and they're in Paris and a bunch of things are getting destroyed. And, like, the Eiffel Tower falls into the Arc de Triomphe, which, like, falls into the Louvre. And the joke is that, like, they're not close to, like, none of those places are close together. But just, like, dumb American movies just show them as being close by all the time.
Right.
And I always thought it was a thing like that, where it was like, you know, oh, it's a dumb, you know, like you said, it's a dumb movie thing. But no, they're right next together. So when we break from our Western conception of, like, burials and burial places, you kind of see throughout history that the idea of a large burial grounds, especially outside of cities, isn't actually that uncommon. Like, you can even think back to our trains episode. Do you remember what that railway was called in the trains episode?
Was it the Necropolis Railway?
Yeah, the London Necropolis Railway.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure if I remembered that accurately or if it was just, like, because I literally just read the word necropolis that I was like, necropolis, right? Every word's necropolis.
No, but I mean, even that was a train system that was set up to take bodies from London out to Brookwood Cemetery, which is the, like, quote unquote, nice, fancy name for the London necropolis. I feel like the word necropolis just gets a bad rap because it's like a foreboding word attached to, like, a very normal concept.
It's too badass.
It's too spooky, and, like, I don't know, video games ruined it for people or something. Really, all it does is refer to just, like, a big, elaborate cemetery. And even people who, like, think about the idea of walking around a graveyard and go, like, ooh, that's for, like, scary goths and Dorian and his partner, and that's gross.
You're right.
Like, even people who freak out about that are really into, like, the Egyptian pyramids, probably. So we're being, like, equal opportunity here is what I felt like we were doing, which I like.
Yeah, everything filled with dead people is kind of cool.
Yeah.
At least a little bit.
Like, it all comes about because for a long time, cities weren't planned. You weren't just like, okay, I just walked over this big mountain range. I'm going to build a city here. You know, you just didn't do that. You just kind of lived where you lived and your goats walked where your goats would walk. And that's how, like, blocks were developed and how streets came about. It was organic, you know?
Right.
So with a lot of older cities, like, because they kind of originated in this kind of very organic, natural way, the sacred religious sites weren't at the center of town. There are exceptions. Like, a lot of South American religious sites were in the middle of towns. And a lot of Western towns have churches at the center. But in a lot of other cultures, religious sites were outside of town because they were holy. They weren't supposed to be brought into everyday life.
Right.
So if you think about, like, the Giza Pyramid Complex, I'm going to have you read a description of the site here and, like, where it's located.
The Giza Pyramid Complex is the site on the Giza Plateau in Greater Cairo, Egypt, that includes the three famous Egyptian pyramids, along with their associated pyramid complexes, and the Great Sphinx of Giza. all were built during the 4th dynasty of the Old Kingdom of Ancient Egypt. The site also includes several cemeteries and the remains of a workers' village. The complex, covering multiple square miles, is about 5 miles west of the Nile River and 8 miles southwest of the city of Cairo.
Yeah, so the Giza Pyramid Complex is a planned tomb location. Like, Cairo is where the seat of Egyptian government has been for millennia. And these pyramids obviously could not be built there. A little big for that.
Right.
So even when they were constructed, the pharaohs who had them built were like, we can't put them in the central part of our city. They're huge.
It's too much. It's so too big.
They're too big. So they had to build them outside of town, but at a place where they could still be on display. And when you build something 8 miles out of your town, you can't expect people to walk 8 miles to get to work every day. So people had to board there and work there. It was, at the time, and kind of still today, a legitimate city of the dead. It was a city based around dead people and graveyards and cemeteries. Because it's not just the three pyramids and the Sphinx. There's actually like multiple fields of rock cut tombs and just like above ground cemeteries that surround the pyramids. And there's a whole network of like ancient roads and causeways that run between them all.
And that's interesting because that does kind of maybe dispel one myth about necropoli.
See?
Necropoles. They're not just cities that are dead or like there are no living people non-existent. It's not like this spooky haunted thing necessarily. Like from what you're saying, I'm understanding that there are people that live there that help like take care of the graves and maintain the area. And like you said, there's boarding there, I'm assuming for people who visit. So there's a whole industry surrounding this city that it is, you know, maybe not as lively as, you know, Cairo or like some big major city, but there's certainly activity going on. It's like a factory town. Like there's a population there. It might not be as big and bustling, but it is a town with people.
Yeah. Actually, a mining town is a really good. So like we're close to Pennsylvania.
Right.
And my grandpa was born in a like mining company town. And if you're not familiar with those, like they're kind of wild in the sense that it was just a town that a company would purchase and then they would employ everyone who lived in the town, but they would run like the mine and the store and the bar and what are other places that you need to live?
The comic book store.
Comic book shop.
Your local punk venues, your vegan bakeries. What else? What else is essential?
Like all those places would be run by just the miners going to a vegan bakery. All these places would be run by a company and everyone who worked there would get a paycheck at the end of every week. And they would just take their paycheck to like the bar. And you would just basically cash your paycheck at the bar and be like, okay, I want $80 of my paycheck to go to my bar tab and like this much to go to like the store. And this is what the Giza Pyramid Complex was like at the time.
Hmm.
There were workers' barracks there and people would come to visit for ceremonies and things like that. And everyday Egyptians were being buried in these rock tombs all the time.
Interesting how, you know, the one-to-one comparison there with a mining town, it's like the mining town is very dependent on mining a specific resource out of that town. That if the mine went out of business, then the economy of the whole town would fall apart with it. Doesn't seem like there's going to be any shortage of like business in a town of dead people, right? Like a cemetery town. That sounds like something where the economy is maybe pretty stable.
It's recession proof.
Maybe. I mean, we've been wrong about what things are recession proof very recently. So I could be wrong, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it does seem on one level, like, more sensible than, you know, mining fossil fuels out of one city for forever.
Yeah. And I mean, these, even today, there's like a little village that exists outside the Giza Pyramid complex. And it's obviously like a tourist hub now. Like, that's what the village is for today.
Right.
But it's still operational. So it's neat. I don't know. I mean, it's meant to be a displayable city of the dead.
Yeah.
And it's active. I mean, that's an instance, like the Giza Pyramid complex is an instance of, you had to have it out there for ceremonial and display reasons. Do you remember when we talked about the Terracotta Army in our like Death in Asia episode?
Yeah.
So the Terracotta Army is part of the Mausoleum of the First Qin Emperor. And that mausoleum had to be outside of the main city because it is almost 4 miles in circumference. So that in itself was also a massive necropolis.
Right.
Because you had to install, you know, a 4 mile circumference filled with all those like soldiers and all the artwork and the tombs itself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That also had to be a place where people had to like live and work and like actively live their lives when they weren't working. So, I mean, you have instances where necropolises are kind of outside of towns because you want to have them on like a big fancy display. You have instances where they're out there because of necessity. But a very cool thing is that there are other instances where there's like a massive necropolis located within a country's borders. I guess like a city's borders too. Things are going to get a little weird here, because what I want to talk about next is the Vatican necropolis.
Oh.
So I grew up Catholic. So I carry with me, that's been, I think they instilled it in me when I got baptized. Like in the water they dipped me in, I just got a bunch of knowledge about the Vatican.
Okay, you're infused.
Infused, like tea. So I've always been really fascinated with the Vatican. But for people who aren't familiar, can you give us like a quick overview of Vatican City?
Vatican City is an independent, self-governed city-state located completely within the Italian city of Rome. Vatican City itself covers about 100 acres, which makes it 1/8 of the size of Central Park in New York City. It is ruled by the Pope and acts as the center of power for the Catholic Church. The city-state itself houses museums, gardens, shops, churches, and catacombs. It houses a population slightly over 800 people and has been in operation since about 100 AD, although it was only officially granted independence from Italy in 1929.
So I think the Vatican is super interesting. Just kind of the existence of a country that is like the size of a couple city blocks, you know? Like, I've walked the entirety of Central Park before, and it's a hike, but 1/8 of that is not that big. But when you think about the like sheer amount of history that takes place in Rome already, and then kind of the political existence of the Vatican being, I think generously, you could say that the political existence of the Vatican has been kind of a mess.
Yeah. I think most people would agree with you there.
things, especially things with death in the area, get kind of goofy. So originally, Roman law, back when Rome was an empire and not a single city, Roman law prevented dead people from being buried within city walls. So if you died in Rome, you couldn't be buried in Rome. They didn't want you, like, your germs seeping into the groundwater or anything like that. So
they don't want you stinking up the joint.
Yeah. And, you know, that's probably a smart move by them. But the Catholic Church established a presence in Rome, like, around that 100 AD mark. But they also weren't cool with Rome yet. There was a lot of still feeding people the lions.
I don't know. That sounds pretty cool to me.
Doing a bunch of cool, like, upside down crosses everywhere.
Okay, it's cool in theory, but in practice, it's pretty fucked up and exploitative. Yeah. We don't condone that.
So the only, like, land the church was able to buy in Rome at the time was, like, the burial grounds that Roman citizens were being buried in.
It's like a house where there was a crime or a murder. You can get it a little cheaper because somebody died in it. But multiply that by how many centuries of dead people? I mean, you could get that for, like, pennies.
I don't know if he's a friend of the podcast, but a personal friend of mine lives in a suicide house, which had to be disclosed to them.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to edit this out, but who is it?
Right.
Lives in a suicide house? Ooh. Yep. Is it spooky for him?
It was like in, I think, the mid 80s or something.
Oh, and when did he get the house? Like
last 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. So,
like, someone else had lived there, but you legally have to disclose it.
Oh, even if it was decades ago?
Yeah.
I feel like whatever bad juju you would feel, for some reason, I feel like that wears off over time. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, you know, people probably died in, like, a lot of buildings. I don't know.
Yeah, do you have to disclose the entire history of a location before you can sell a home? Like, okay, here's something you need to know. In 600 BC, we have reason to believe that
some
T-Rex ate... Oh, I said a T-Rex in 600 BC. I'm a fucking moron.
650 million BC.
Yeah, this is why you do the research.
Well, not 650 million. 65 million BC. There we go.
Whatever, dude. Can't be worse than what I just said. But yeah, so they probably got a good raid on it because of the death.
I mean, exactly. That's not very far off. Like, it was quote unquote, like, tainted land. And so they were like, we'll just put this weird, like, Jewish cult over there. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, at the time, a lot of building growth happened. Like, a lot of building growth happened. You know, it was just like, you built a building and someone didn't like it, so they would just knock it down and then just keep building on top of it. That means that, like, the floor of a city rises over time because you're having to, like, bulldoze over rubble and compact it. The tense political history of the Vatican also means that a lot of records have been destroyed and a lot of history was, like, intentionally lost over time. Because there were periods where, like, the Catholic Church was like, actually, we're not going to have the Pope in Rome. He's going to be in this other place. And that's when you get into anti-popes.
And anti-popes?
Anti-popes. It's really fascinating. But the anti-popes are, like, talking trash about everything that happened in Rome. And were, like, intentionally destroying history that had occurred in Rome. So the whole land that the Vatican is built on is kind of like, literally anything may have happened here and we don't know.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's kind of a bummer because there's probably a lot of really cool history that's been lost. But that's also how, in 1940, an excavation attempting to find the grave of St. Peter accidentally ended up discovering an entire necropolis under St. Peter's Basilica.
Accidentally discovered a necropolis.
Yep.
That's the accident of a lifetime, man.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It was wild. So they were looking for the grave of Peter, and there were all these legends about, oh, he's under St. Peter's Basilica, because I guess that makes sense because it was named after him and all that. So they started digging. And they got about 15 feet below the surface of these Vatican buildings, and they start finding bones. And they're like...
they're like, jackpot, it's Peter, for sure.
It's like, definitely. They like start testing them. And so they're testing the bones, and the bones that they're finding are dating back to like 300 AD.
Hmm.
So like a couple hundred years after Peter would have been buried.
And a little late.
They're like, this is a little weird. So they keep digging. And eventually they just end up excavating this pretty sizable compound. Like, there are multiple freestanding buildings that were discovered. They were all laying about from 15 to 40 feet below the surface. So, like, they've been buried for quite a while.
Yeah.
And the oldest buildings were dating back to about 64 AD.
Damn.
So, like, at the time, almost 1,900 years old. And all these buildings had just been, like, destroyed and bulldozed and built over by Vatican construction. And they're just finding, like, bodies and artifacts, like, hundreds of things down here. It actually reminds me a lot of the mausoleum at Halicarnassus, which we talked about in our mausoleums episode. It was just that one that was uncovered while they were excavating a parking lot.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In Turkey.
Right.
It's also how Richard III was discovered. Like, people were just like, I guess he's in this parking lot.
That's still so goofy.
But like, that's what they were doing in the Vatican, is they were just digging under these structures. And they were like, oh, actually, there's a lot of stuff down here that they just didn't know about.
Do you think there was a guy on the surface who was yelling down, like, what'd you guys find? Did you guys find Peter? Is Peter down there? And the guys down there were like, probably.
Probably somewhere. But this was actually like a huge, really good lens into daily Roman life at the time. Because, you know, as I mentioned, the people who were buried here were just everyday Roman citizens who couldn't be buried in Rome proper and had to be buried in this trash land. But it, I mean, it's neat. Like, sites like this can be found all over the world. Wikipedia has a super long list of them that's sorted by country. And it ranges from China to India to Egypt to France to Russia. The necropolis in Russia is actually in the Kremlin Wall. It's called the Kremlin Wall Necropolis.
What is the Kremlin Wall? I'm not super familiar with, like, what their layout, their situation is.
So, have you ever played Tetris?
Yes. Thank you for starting somewhere I can easily track you. Like, video game? Yes. Go on.
You know all those buildings that show up in the background of Tetris?
Yeah, for sure.
So those are all like the old part of Moscow. The Kremlin is like the heart of Moscow, where right. That big like onion church is, St. Basil's.
Yeah, I've got a distinct image in my head of like weird tops of buildings. But I guess my question is, the Kremlin Wall, is that like, I mean, what is that? Are we talking like, is it similar to the Great Wall of China? Is it like, like encasing the city? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, it mostly just encases like a smaller, it's almost like a castle wall.
Okay.
in the middle of Moscow.
Okay, gotcha. So there was a necropolis inside the wall?
Yep.
How?
Because it was such a venerated space that starting in 1917, there were some Soviet revolutionaries who were killed. And the Soviet government was like, we want to really give these people a resting place of honor. So they just started interring people in and along the wall in Moscow.
Huh. So a necropolis could be within a city. It doesn't necessarily have to be a city in and of itself.
Yeah. The thing with the necropolis is that it's usually just self-contained.
Okay, gotcha.
So this wall was basically a walking path that had tunnels going through it that housed the remains of like politicians and military leaders, like scientists. There's a couple cosmonauts there.
That's pretty cool. I think I'm just a little put off because that's pushing it, you know? Like, if definitionally the necropolis is like, you know, what was it? A burial site separate from a city or at a distance from a city. Like, putting it in the wall of the city is cutting it real close. You're pushing it, Kremlin.
It's those Ruskies, man.
Just always pushing boundaries, huh?
I mean, it's like, it was known at the time as a necropolis. That's mostly in there as an example of, like, necropolises aren't weird, scary places, you know? This was a spot where, like, state funerals were taking place.
Right.
Just like the pyramids in Giza, this is where you would be buried if you were, like, a higher up in their system.
That is insightful. It is a little bit like there's a part of me that's getting sadder that we are demystifying necropolises and that I can no longer think of them purely as haunted house cities filled with ghosts and skeletons, but that's okay. It's probably best that we're, you know, doing the honest work of demystifying these things because they are, you know, they're in cities and they're used by regular people.
Sure. Yeah, but then there's also still places like, you remember Colma, California, which I think showed up in our Weird Cemeteries episode? That's the place where San Francisco puts all their dead bodies.
Right. Okay, it's starting to come back to me a little bit.
Yeah, so that is a legitimate necropolis. It's a cemetery city. The living population of Colma, California, where you can go and you can, like, go to, like, a Dollar General and get gas for your car. The living population is 1,800 people, and there are 1.5 million people buried there.
Right. I think I remember you reading this figure where it's just, like, a staggering number of dead people stuffed into this city.
Yeah. But that is, like, the epitome of what you think of when you think of a necropolis, you know?
Right.
Like a census designated place where there are way more dead people than there are living people.
Right.
But at the same time, people like have homes there and go to school there and things like that. I think as the world kind of develops more, I wonder if necropolises will actually become more common. And I want to know what you think about this. Just as, like, people in our cities keep dying, but we also keep building more and more things. Like, I wonder if we're going to have a return to finding, like, big spaces of land outside cities where we're going to, like, bury a lot of people.
I don't know. I think I would like to see it. I know that recently my girlfriend and I were taking a walk through Green Lawn, you know, the probably biggest cemetery here in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And it did kind of strike me how every grave, for the most part, is like its own thing by itself. There's not a whole lot of, like, you know, even the family plots, they were basically like separate headstones clustered together.
True.
And those tended to be kind of old, whereas like the newer grave markers were very individualized. And that can be kind of cool. Some of the headstones there have like cool art engraved on them and some goofy stuff. There was one where like a husband and wife had one shared gravestone that had an etching of, I am not sure if it was Disneyland or Disney World, but it looked like that. And then it had like a road leading up to it that they were both on and they were holding hands. And he was wearing a vest that I couldn't quite make out what the back patch was on his vest, but it was a separate color from anything else on the headstone.
What?
So I don't, it was awesome. And I'm like, not sure if he was part of some, like, I don't know, the gang or motorcycle crew or something that had like those vests. I don't know. Just like so many questions about this. Yeah. I'll have to like get a photo of that and send it to you next time I'm there. But yeah, separate individual graves can be very cool. And there's a part of it that's very dignifying for the individual and probably provides some closure for the family. But I think you can still have that without there just being basically an open field of individual markers. You know what I mean? Like, think about the pyramids and like, you know, the necropolis model is probably something that would be good to go back toward. Like having something that's just not like a big empty field, but having something where there's a concerted effort. Like, we know there's going to be many dead people here and we plan on marking all of those graves. Why would we not have like one concerted effort to house all of them or do something special? You know, at the very least, until we get like green burials and the legality of that figured out for those of us who want, you know, something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I would be interested in seeing that. It'd be really cool if like we had destination spots that were like big, impressive landmarks that also house dead people. It's like they serve some practical function, but they're also, you know, do you imagine if we had our own pyramids in Columbus, just something cool other than like a lot of one-off cemeteries?
So those are really great thoughts. And I'm very excited for you to engage with what we're going to close the episode out on. Because there's kind of a, I guess, test laboratory necropolis happening in the world right now.
A test-cropolis.
A test-cropolis. So this is going to be another one where we're going to push the bounds a little bit, because the more like quote unquote acceptable name for this is the Jerusalem Catacombs. But I think that's mostly just because calling anything a necropolis is like a little freaky, where catacombs is a little easier.
Despite all of our demystifying attempts, that term still has some bad branding associated with it.
So the Jerusalem catacombs are fascinating and very cool. And I think if people are going to continue to want like physical burials in the near future, as cities get bigger and bigger, this is what we're going to have to move to. The issue with burying people in Jerusalem is that Jerusalem has been occupied by everybody for thousands of years. A lot of people have died in Jerusalem, and a lot of the places in Jerusalem are protected from being destroyed or bulldozed to create more open space.
Right.
A really unique issue with Jerusalem, though, is that people from all over the world who are Jewish want to be buried there. So the Jewish diaspora means that you've got not only people in the city who want to be buried there, but people from all over the world who may have never even been to Jerusalem, who are trying to find and buy burial plots in the city. So what the government is doing is constructing basically a catacomb system under the city of Jerusalem that's going to be a fully functional city, like quote-unquote city, like a city of the dead that's going to house this.
A city of dead people under Jerusalem.
Yeah, and it's going to be very, very cool. They're actually having a hard time opening right now because of coronavirus.
But they're right there, like, ready to go.
Yeah, read this article that I pulled here. It's very, very neat.
Cool air from deep inside the mountain lightly wafts through cavernous arched tunnels. Along the walls of the subterranean passages, rows of human-sized chambers have been dug into the rock. It is unmistakably a catacomb. Yet this mass tomb is not a relic of the Roman Empire. It was made with huge electric diggers, and the walls are lined with concrete. People will enter by lift, and those with limited mobility will be able to use a golf buggy to traverse the necropolis. Facing a dire shortage of land, the city of Jerusalem is preparing at the end of this month to revive an ancient custom of underground burial. A 4-year project has dug out a mile of labyrinthine tunnels into a hillside on the outskirts of the holy city to accommodate 23,000 bodies. The entire project cost an estimated $50 million and took just over 4 years to complete.
Yeah, so this opened in like August/September of 2019. And wow. It's actually pretty neat under there. It definitely looks like catacombs. Let me send a quick little pic over to you here.
Wow. Okay, so this is an image when it was still under construction, right? Because there's like some scaffolding and stuff in place. But man, that looks fucking sweet. This is all underground?
Yes.
It looks pretty well lit.
I mean, that's because, so they're building this because people want to be buried there and people want to visit their families, but the logistics of the city of Jerusalem are making it so difficult to do this that they had to come up with another system. And the best way to be able to like have burials and also deal with the amount of people who are coming in to visit was to build catacombs under the city of Jerusalem, which is very, very cool.
Yeah.
There's going to be like shops down there. Like that article said, there's going to be like a golf cart rental system if you have a spot that's not by the entrance. It's very, very neat. And I sincerely wonder if we're going to start seeing a lot more, especially like older European cities, start doing things like this.
Yeah. Yeah. This just seems logistically like one of the best options that you could do in a historic ancient town like that. I just called Jerusalem a town, you know, a little town. But yeah, it's amazing how inviting this looks. It really does look welcoming and well-lit, and there's beautiful chandeliers with this kind of like honeycomb-stained glass sort of thing going on. I want to go hang out in there. I want to go look around. It looks very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's neat that they're like actively kind of working with the idea of like, how can we make death, not even death, but how can we make a necropolis something that doesn't sound like a horrifying place to go to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's very neat. I think it's pretty cool.
Yes, we stan. Well, thank you for putting this together, Max. I want to get buried in a necropolis, but I also want a green burial, and I also want like a water cremation, and I want to donate my body to science. Thanks for adding to the list.
We got to start getting cloning going here.
Yeah, just making my... get cloning going just so I can choose several options for how to deal with my body when I die.
So you can take all agency away from your clones.
All right, Dorian Prime will be disposed of in this way. Dorian 2, Dorian Jr. Well, thank you for putting this together. And thank you, listener, for listening to our podcast. We love hearing from y'all. What do you think about necropolises? What should we continue to make them? Is there anything kind of weird or interesting about them in your perspective? Do you hate calling them necropolises? Would you prefer necropoli? What do you want us to do? This is a hard word to say. It's a real mouthful. Anyway, tell us what you think. We are on Twitter and Instagram at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. Search Facebook for Pre-Dead Boys Podcast and find our Facebook group. And you can join our Discord. Just email or message us at one of the aforementioned avenues and we'll get you an invite to our Discord. I want to give a quick shout out to Quirked on the Discord. They pointed out to me that it is true, as we discussed on a previous episode where we talked about, you know, how cell phones can negatively affect men's parts. It is true that there is a low level of radiation that comes out of cell phones, and that it can, there are studies done that can correlate to lowered sperm count and things like higher risk for cancer and stuff like that. So I wasn't talking out of my ass, Max.
I retroactively absolve you for any poo-pooing of your scientific knowledge that I did.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the very smart, informative comments from the people in the Discord. Thanks for sharing that, Quirked. If you would like to support what we do on this podcast, we would appreciate it. Why don't you join our Patreon? Patreon is a platform where you can pledge a small amount of money every month to help keep this podcast going, help us keep growing, and in return, you get some rewards. If you would have talked to us like a month or two ago, the only rewards you would have gotten are some previews of upcoming episodes and maybe some cool wallpapers that I made for your phone and desktop devices. But now, if you donate $5 a month or more, you get access to bonus episodes. And our first episode about The Black Parade by My Chemical Romance is available to listen to. Shortly after this episode comes out, I will have part two of that finished. And we have some other cool stuff coming up on the Patreon. So make sure you get on that. Check out patreon.com/predeadboys. Want to give a shout out to our new patrons. At $5 per month, we have Brandy Langston. Thank you, Brandy.
Thank you.
And at $3 per month, we have Emily. I don't know if it's Pexi or Pesci. I don't know.
P-E-S-C-I?
Yeah.
Pesci. That's Pesci. That's Joe Pesci. I guess just because there's someone famous who has your last name, you're not beholden to pronounce your own last name like they do.
No, I have a couple friends with the last name Meyer, but it's spelled M-A-Y-E-R, like John Mayer.
Oh, John Meyer.
No, that's... You motherfucker. Anyway, thank you, Brandy. Thank you, Emily. Thank you to all of our patrons.
Thank you.
You guys help us continue doing what we do, and we got cool stuff on deck thanks to your support, so we really appreciate you. If you're a little hard up for cash right now, another way you can support us is by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. That helps us get a little boost in the rankings there. Max, we got a new 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That peaked my headphones, at least. I don't know if it peaked your microphone, but that was good.
My dog's barking now, though.
It's good. There's a lot of fitting enthusiasm there. This review is from a user named 283959494948. It's just a number. So I don't know what happened there. But they say, it is what it claims. 5 stars. Found by Googling podcasts about death as advertised. 5 stars.
It does what it says on the box.
Yep. I appreciate that frankness. I also appreciate that apparently if you Google podcasts about death, we come up in the results. That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, no shit. I'm going to do that right now.
Yeah, try that out. Anyway, thank you, whoever the anonymous number is that posted that. We really appreciate that. And if you don't want to leave a review, but you still want to support us, the best possible way you can support us, financial or otherwise, is just tell people about this podcast. We don't advertise. We rely entirely on word of mouth. So just share on social media about your favorite episode of the show, or, you know, send a link to somebody who would appreciate this. That's how we grow. We would really appreciate that. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check out Brat Curse at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. Now is a fantastic time, by the way, to support musicians who are not able to tour or play shows. That cuts into their ability to sell merchandise, and they certainly don't make a ton of money off of streams. So make sure, if there's a band or two that you really like, go check them out, buy some stuff from them. You can start at bratcurse.bandcamp.com and support those lovely fellas over there. But yeah, I would just really encourage all you guys. Like, we've been on the receiving end of this with like the Patreon and getting some kickback for what we do. And we really appreciate that, because we know, like, you know, a lot of people have experienced layoffs or are a little strapped for cash. But, you know, if you find yourself in a position where you can support creative work that people do, it's a really good feeling when you get to give a little bit of that cash and support bands, artists, just stuff like that. If you support any artist during this pandemic, you get a virtual pat on the back or a high five from me, because that shit is really cool.
Yeah, that's tight. Let's help folks out.
Help folks out. That's probably as good a note as any to end on. Max, you got any other parting words for our listeners before we go?
No.
Okay, that was a really firm no. It sounded a little aggressive. You're like, get out of my house.
No, I don't know.
Now that's just disingenuous. All right, thank you guys again. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rock.
Oh, my ringtone is on like a fucking amateur.
Podcast fucking ruined. What? God damn it. Pack it in, boys. The podcast is dead. The podcast
Send
is dead forever.
Send Patreon money back. God damn it.
Fuck.
Kind of embarrassing that's the first text message I've got in the past hour.